Well, I think every company, however small or big it is, needs to draw a circle around itself. And then you need to make sure that within that circle, if there's schools that need helping, you help the schools. If there's a clinic in that circle, you help the clinic. And as your company gets bigger, you know, you can put a circle around your country. And then as it gets bigger still, you can put a circle around the world and help.
That was Virgin founder Sir Richard Branson, who firmly believes that purpose-led businesses can be both sustainable and profitable. We had the opportunity to interview him backstage for a Focus Talk video and podcast at Virgin Atlantic's Businesses and Adventure event, held in partnership with Investec in Johannesburg. The internationally recognized live business event series brought together masters and mavericks of business, including futurist and author Faith Popcorn, Kim Reed, the founder of Takealot.com, Fani Titi, joint CEO of Investec, and lawyer and activist Tando Hopper, amongst others. In episode one of this two-part Focus Talk, local entrepreneur and founder of SME Africa, Marnus Bridrake, interviews Sir Richard Branson on how entrepreneurs can thrive in challenging times and why human relationships in startups and established business are critical, even in a digital era. In part two, Marnus turns the conversation to tackling youth unemployment, and the interview is joined by Stephen Kossoff, Investec co-founder and the co-convener of YES, the Youth Employment Service, and Kensani Mongwe, whose life was turned around through a YES internship. But first, here's a 10-minute masterclass in entrepreneurship from the world's most famous serial entrepreneur, Sir Richard Branson.
Richard, great chatting to you.
Thank you.
When last did you have a tie on?
I think when I got knighted. I think the Queen, I brought out a record called God Save the Queen by the Sex Pistols 25 years earlier. And I was already nervous that instead of putting the sword on my shoulder, she'd lop off my head. So I thought without a tie, I might be in trouble.
I feel completely overdressed here, so I'm going to lose mine. And then
I had a pair of scissors, I'd cut it off. You know.
Richard, so I grew up in a small town in Harry Smith in the Free State, and I didn't know anything about money, about business. And then the very first book that I read was Robert Kiyosaki's Rich Dad Poor Dad. The second book that I read was Screw It, Let's Do It from Richard Branson. And I remember at the time when I read Kiyosaki's book, I just wanted to make money. But when I read your book, I wanted to become an entrepreneur because I think it's the coolest thing ever that you've done. And I've got huge respect for you, and I know the business owners in South Africa also do. Whether you started a business 50 years ago, you're starting a business now, whether you're starting a business in London or in South Africa, there are always, always challenges. And my question to you is, how do you personally, as Richard, think about challenges in your own mind, and how do you personally solve it?
I think when there are challenges, that there are enormous opportunities. So, you know, I hated flying on other people's airlines, just said, screw it, let's do it. Let's try to, you know, buy a secondhand 747 and start an airline. So I think just generally, if you keep your eyes open, you'll see situations where, people are not doing things very well, and you can step in and improve people's lives. And effectively, if you do that, you've become an entrepreneur and you've started a business. Over the years, I mean, 1987, I mean, there's been, you know, quite a few crashes. I think in some ways, the Virgin companies have come out the stronger from them. Recently, since Brexit, we've seen a number of airlines going bankrupt. Because people love flying Virgin Atlantic, you know, we've survived and we're able to expand with a short-haul airline, Virgin Connect, into routes that were otherwise, operated by other people. So sometimes in struggling times, there are opportunities.
So practical things for business owners out there. Are you saying just if there's a challenge, think of it as an opportunity? Don't ever see the negative. Is that what you're saying?
A born optimist. I will always look at the sunny side of things. I sometimes fall flat in my face, life's so much more fun to be an optimist. And just to try, get out there and try things. And And you'll learn, you know, even if it doesn't work out, you'll learn a hell of a lot from giving it a go. You know, I've just had a party last night for the new Branson Centre of Entrepreneurship here in South Africa and met a lot of these young entrepreneurs who are doing extraordinary things. You know, there was, you know, one entrepreneur who's just set up a whole company with for deaf people selling coffee. You know, a lot of these people were there, and it's going extraordinarily well. You know, in a sense, he's it's almost a social, it may be a social business, I don't know, but it's, you know, it is just like a social business. It's doing great. You know, he's absolutely convinced that they'll employ 10,000 people with the Branson Centre of Entrepreneurship over the next 2 to 3 years, and I believe that that will happen. Mm.
Talking about that, I saw that the mission is to create sustainable, purpose-led businesses, and I was wondering when I saw that purpose-led, like it's all over. Simon Sinek says, "Find your why." Everyone's talking about finding purpose. Purpose is it really that important for you? Isn't it just about making money?
I think you can do you can do both, basically. I mean, obviously, if you're running a purpose-led business and it's losing money, it's not going to survive. So if you're going to be sustainable, it's got to be profitable. But we've invested a lot of money in in funds that are just purpose-driven, and they do, at the end of the year, they do a massive analysis on how they've helped the SDGs, or what they've achieved from it, and we'll definitely give preference over investing in a company that can kill two birds with one stone. I mean, like the deaf people selling coffee. I mean, it's and making money. So it is killing two birds with one stone, or three birds maybe.
When we look at brands that people absolutely love, obviously Virgin, but if you look like at some of the new companies like Uber and Tesla and even Apple, not that new, but people love it because of the tech, and personal service has become secondary to that. I think, like for myself, I don't even want to deal with people when I go and book something. I just want to go online and book it. Can you agree that some industries tech will just take over? Or do you think, as Richard, there will always be that human element?
I hope and think that there will always be that human element. I mean, Virgin is really sort of built on our people and them being proud of working for the company and creating incredible things. I mean, like, you know, we're just about to launch a cruise ship company called Virgin Voyages. In fact, in 10 days' time, I actually set sail on the first cruise ship that was just coming out of Genoa, where it's been built, to check it out. We'll have 2,000 people working on each of our cruise ships that we build. If we can deliver to them a product that is, better than any other cruise ship in the world, which we think we can do, if we look after them, they'll smile, they'll be happy, and our passengers will be happy. And if that works, then we're in a position where we can move on to, take on another industry afterwards.
Personal service is obviously what you're talking about. And systems and processes are super important in the business. But you saying personal service and people and client service. And in my opinion, that's like almost contrary to one another. So what would your advice be? How do you build systems, but you still have the flexibility of people and making their own decisions? And I think especially if you grow, because when you do it, when you're small, it's kind of simple, right? But when you grow big, it's very challenging.
Yeah, I mean, with Virgin Atlantic, when we launched with one plane 35 years ago, I remember looking around on our first flight and seeing all these smiling, happy staff and thinking, are we going to be able to keep that up for, 35 years or 30 years or whatever it was? I don't think I thought 35 years ahead at the time, but 30 years. And the great thing, if you go on Virgin Atlantic today, because they're proud of the company, they are still smiling, happy people. And And if anything, I think that the airlines improved, which is rare in a lot of companies. I think for a company to still have that kind of spirit after 35 years, anyway, says a lot about the team of people who say run Virgin Atlantic, who give them the tools to do the job, and we try, we try to keep surprising the public, but also surprising our staff as well. Mm.
The one thing that I'm super passionate about is to have focus on one thing, but that's like complete opposite Richard Branson, like go into everything. Was that always the case, or do you think you focus, you make a success, and you move on? What would your advice be to business owners out there?
If I'd stayed in my first business, which is record shops, we would be bust. And I know that people when I was in my teens and early 20s, people said he's stretching the brand too far. He's going to fall flat in his face. But I'm inquisitive. I love learning about new things. I love trying new things. I love shaking up industries. Over the years we've created maybe $18 billion companies in something like 12 different sectors, and that is just simply because I love I love challenging the team around me and being proud of the new venture that we do.
It's almost unbelievable what you've created, but it's such an inspiration. And thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's really amazing.
We now move into part two of our podcast. And this time, Marnus asked Sir Branson to share some ideas from a global perspective on how to solve one of South Africa's most pressing issues, youth unemployment. We are joined by former Investec CEO Stephen Kosoff and Kensani Mongwe, who landed a job through the Youth Employment Service.
So South Africa is sitting with a youth unemployment rate of north of 40%. And Stephen, you, the co-convener of the Youth Employment Service. That's right, yes. And you've been tasked with, by President Cyril Ramaphosa to create 1 million interns in the next couple of years.
We keep going.
Keep going?
Yes.
How long is that?
No, that was his original aim, but you've got to be practical. And we need the economy to grow, so it will take longer. But, we're up and running. It's taken us we started really effectively January. We've done 27,500 internships or in the process. And to bring all the corporates along and all the small business and get the rules of the game right, that's, we're still in the teething period. But, it's like Jim Collins' old flywheel. Once you get the flywheel turning, then it gets its own momentum. So, we'll get to 1 million, but you might have to extend the number of years.
Sure. But even that, we can't downplay that number already. It's like so many families and everything being...
The upliftment is phenomenal when you give people an opportunity and you give them a skill. Mm. And the hope that they can get up in the morning and look after themselves. And that's the key. That's what we're trying to achieve. And, it doesn't always have to be inside a corporate. But it's giving that individual a skill, a learning, and then the confidence to present themselves in a corporate environment or to go into their own business. And all those aspects of, what we're trying to achieve in the Youth Employment Service are there. And Investec as an example, we on our second round, so we did 1250 last year, and we're on our second round of a further, I think, similar sort of number. And we outsource to service providers, but we make sure that these service providers value add to the employee. Mm. You really can take it a long way. Mm. It's very hard to bring them all inside a corporate environment.
I want to chat to Kensani in a bit because she's the proof in the pudding of one of your candidates. But having Richard Branson here, the face of entrepreneurship around the world, I got to challenge you with something about entrepreneurship. And that would be that we create such a big emphasis around creating more jobs. But shouldn't we maybe put that emphasis on creating entrepreneurs and showing people and training people how to create their own income?
But I think, you know, that's part of what we try and do in the Youth Employment Service. Some of it is creating entrepreneurs. If Tashmia was here, she'd give you a whole story about hydroponic farming and other aspects of what the Youth Employment Service actually achieves. We create these neighborhood hubs within the townships, and we're trying to take the place of work right into the heart of the township as opposed to out in the city. So I think, you know, ultimately, you have to create an environment that fosters and develops entrepreneurs. And the Youth Employment Service does try and achieve part of that. It does give people the opportunity to go into their own business. I'll give you a good example of one of our interns that went to the hotel school, because that's what we do. We send them to hotel school or artisan school. The intern actually went to do his work part of the program, not the training part of the program, at the Elangeni Hotel, started making cupcakes at night. Eventually, he got so busy that he jumped off the bus and went into his own business. He now employs 12 of his own family members. Yeah. So, you know, by giving people a skill, you can do phenomenal work to dent unemployment. And because one skill does create multiple jobs. And one of South Africa's big problems is there is a massive shortage of skills. In fact, we estimate 800,000 800,000 skills short. And where we've been having difficulty is Home Affairs won't give visas if the people aren't from, you know, South Africa, which is very, very wrong. Mm. Because those skills, if they create an average of 5 jobs, okay, maybe that's a bit high, but let's use that number, that's 4 million people that you're taking off the street, 4 million people less that you need to give social grants to. So we need to change a lot of our rules of the game in South Africa, which is stifling growth, stifling the creation of entrepreneurs, and creating unemployment. Mm. And that, you know, the president is onto it, but he needs to get his whole party along.
Sure. Richard, what's your take on that? Jobs versus entrepreneurs, which ones should we focus on?
They're both incredibly important. Obviously, I'm biased, being an entrepreneur. Last night we had a party for the whole team that is revamping the Branson Centre of Entrepreneurship here in South Africa. It's a great group of people. Virgin Active is very much behind it. And they think they can create 10,000 jobs over the next 2 or 3 years. A lot of the young entrepreneurs that they'd taken on board were there at the party. I've also spent the last 2 or 3 days going to schools in the townships of South Africa, and, you know, they're lacking, obviously. Education is not as good as it should be. There are a lot of kids sitting on the floor. There were no chairs and so on. If a kid does leave school at 15 or 16, as I did, they can become an entrepreneur. It may be more difficult for them to get other jobs. And I suspect, you know, quite a lot of them are street savvy enough to become entrepreneurs. So I think a country is great to hear, that this country is encouraging entrepreneurship. In Britain, we set up something called Virgin Startup Loans, where we have nearly 5,000, I think, startup companies, and we arrange small loans for them. The government chip in, and then we have mentors who work with them. And the success rate of these 5,000 is far, far greater than if you don't help people. Mm-hmm.
Kensani, as I said, you're the proof in the pudding. You did a internship through Investec.
Yes.
And then now you've got a full-time job at Sabi Sands Nature Reserve, right?
Yes.
How has YES changed your life and the life of your family?
I can say I completed my matric in 2007. 2007, 2008, I didn't go to college or do anything. 2009, I went to Stanford College to do travel and tourism. And then I came back home. I stayed for 2 years without a job. And then I decided, let me do something similar to tourism. Then I did a FAGAS guiding level 2. Then after that, I got an opportunity to do a community tour. It was nothing. For a month, it would give me at least 100 rand for a whole day doing a community tour. And then I done that for several years, I think, yeah. After there was a post in Kruger National Park, they needed a freelance guide for 2 weeks. And then I applied, they called me, I worked there for 2 weeks, and then after, I came back doing the community tour, and then I heard about the internship posting subsent. Then I decided to apply, they called me, and then I got a job.
You could have applied to Ulus Sabha in Savi Sands. I mean, you just got the wrong address in the future.
And it has
like
changed.
Pouching.
Why not?
Yeah, and then it changed my life a lot because now I'm now working at Savi Sands. Yeah, I got a job at Savi Sands, but I've stayed many years without a job. Then the YES program, I mean, changed my life.
Yeah. And you can now go to Savi Sands and say you've just got a job offer from Lusaba.
Lusaba, yeah.
And they must better your rate, and then I take commission on that, and we all benefit from this.
I once had a dinner many, many years ago in France with the boss of the company, and his managing director was there, and I really thought the managing director was good, so I offered him a job, and he decided to join us the next day. And the boss wrote me a letter saying, When you're invited out to dinner, you do not steal the cutlery. I felt a little guilty, but he turned out to be a great managing director.
Richard, talking about Ulusaba, through the Pride and Purpose team there, I believe you've done amazing stuff in the community. What's been your learnings from that?
Well, I think every company, almost however small or big it is, needs to draw a circle around itself. And then you need to make sure that within that circle, if there's schools that need helping, you help the schools. If there's a clinic in that circle, you help the clinic. If people have got HIV and they're not getting antiretroviral drugs, as happened in the past in South Africa, you make sure they do get antiretroviral drugs. As your company gets bigger, you can put a circle around your country, and then as it gets bigger still, you can put a circle around the world and help. So Ulusaba have done wonderful things. I think the team there. It's not just Virgin Money. It is all our guests. We they go out and they see the projects and they can feel part of the projects and I think they feel their visits to South Africa are the richer for it. But they definitely made the community the richer as a result in lots of different ways. And the clinic that we set up near there, called the Babesi Clinic, has managed to get the average expectancy of life up by about 7 years. You can make quite a big difference.
Mm. Just to come back there, Monis, on you said entrepreneurs or jobs. So there's a very good book written by an Indian guy who worked at Cisco called Doing Both. Mm. And you have to do both. Mm. You need to build entrepreneurs, but not everyone's cut to be an entrepreneur.
Very true.
And they create a lot of jobs. And you've got to do both in life.
So. And entrepreneurs are very important, which is a new word that I've only heard recently. And that is, you make sure that people within your company, if they are entrepreneurs, they don't have to leave your company to go and be their own entrepreneurs. They can be an entrepreneur within your company, sure, doing entrepreneurial things, and they should be rewarded for that. Mm. And in fact, if you don't have a bunch of entrepreneurs working in a bigger company, you're going to be a struggling big company.
That's the culture we try to build at Investec, is to create an environment of entrepreneurs,
yeah,
who have a can-do attitude, who are very service-oriented and come up with lots of good ideas, and then they, well rewarded.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think that is very, very important for growth and development of a company as well.
Yeah.
So you need both. You need all three.
Yeah.
Entrepreneurs, jobs, and entrepreneurs.
Sure. Personally, I feel there's something needed where, when we think about entrepreneurship, and I think that's globally, we think about entrepreneurs such as Richard Branson creating Virgin, or Bill Gates creating Microsoft. But I think we should also make entrepreneurship that you can just create your own income, and that might be small. You're not going to be the next guy on Forbes, but I think that will make a fundamental shift as well.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think that most entrepreneurs maybe employ, five, six people maximum, and and they're fulfilling a really important part in society. I mean, if you add them all up together, they're employing a lot of people, and in their own way, I mean, the only way that their business is succeeding is because people like it and people feel it's serving a purpose. Collectively, they're an incredibly yeah. important group of people. Mm.
And that's where you get real job creation, mm. is the more the SMME grows from 5 to 10 sure. people or 10 to 20 is where you're really getting labor absorption and job creation.
For sure.
So those are very, very important businesses. And you can see, even in the developed world, take a country like Australia, there are more small businesses than there are members of unions today. Mm. And that's what the transformation of society over the last 50 years perhaps has done, is create those countries that have done well, have created those entrepreneurs
sure.
that work for themselves, they don't rely on anyone, they get up and go every morning on their truck, or if they're a plumber or an artisan mm. or anything like that, and they work for themselves. And you get a lot of small business in society that is a functioning, developed world society. Mm. The other thing is, you're getting, like, people don't have permanent jobs, so they work in the gig economy, and you'll know this well. And there are apps that have been created that where you can auction your skills every day. And that's going to become a lot more prevalent in today's world.
Mm. Talking about that, Richard, and also what Stephen said in terms of Investec, like they're building that intrapreneur that you're talking about. The youngsters, the millennials, they want different things in the workspace, right? They want flexible hours. They want more incentive schemes. They want to be entrepreneurs inside the organization. What's your advice on retaining and recruiting these youngsters?
At Virgin, we're experimenting all the time with new ideas. And
apart from going on to interviews and stealing people from other companies.
And by and large, they're working. So, for instance, at the Virgin Group, if somebody wants to go on 2 months' leave, we'll pay them. They can go on 2 months' leave. If somebody has a wedding or a funeral or a party they need to go to, they won't have to ask. They can do it. If somebody wants to work at home, they can do it. If somebody wants to work at home on a Friday or a Monday, they can do it. If somebody wants to go part-time, they can do it. So we're trying to treat people as we would treat our brothers or our children, basically, or our brothers and sisters. If they need flexibility in their life, we'll let them have flexibility. If they have a baby, we'll give a year's maternity, and they can split it with their husband if they want as well. So and it sounds like if you add all that together, it's going to cost the company a lot of money. But the actual fact is that, on the holiday front, for instance, I think we average maybe one day more per year than we did before we did this. So, and yet, when people go to the pub and they say, what company do you work for? They're really proud of the fact mm. they work for Virgin, for hopefully many reasons. But that definitely contributes to that.
For sure. Stephen, that's interesting because you've just adopted that policy at Investec. Unlimited leave and yeah. dress as you like during the day.
Dress for the day.
Dress for the day.
Be appropriate for the day, but it's up to you to think, to decide what you believe is appropriate. And if you want leave, you can take it.
Is that how you see the future of work?
I think, and disciplined people, as Richard says, they don't go and they know they've got a job to do and they know they've got to deliver, and you measure them on output as opposed to the amount of time at the desk. You get a totally different culture. And people feel that they are much more in control of their day and their lives. And I think that's very important, as long as you deliver. And you measure it on output, not on how much time you spend in the show. And you get maybe a different type of person who's more entrepreneurial, intrapreneurial. But that's what a corporate wants. People who can think for themselves and get things done and don't have to be desperate. Mm.
Kinsani, in closing off, you've got two of the greatest world changers next to you. What do you think should be the message to them in terms of youth unemployment? What should we do better as a country, as big business, when it comes to youth employment? Do you have a message?
I think to them, I'll just say, helping is important because they got power. If they have this chance to help the youth out there, they must go for it because there are people who need their help. So, and Thank you very much.
I couldn't agree more. And there's a lot to be done. You know, as I said, I've just been to, you know, four of these townships, schools, and it won't cost much to make these schools, you know, to bring them up to a level where they can make a real difference in society, giving kids a chance of a really good education, especially when they're young, is so important, and I think that's lacking in some of the townships.
Yeah. It's very hard to understand why in a country like South Africa we haven't made much more progress on that front. And you know, I still can't work it out. And another NGO that I work with is called Innovation Africa. It's an Israeli-American NGO, puts water into villages. These villages have no water. We'll have done 60 villages with 5,000 people in each village by April.
Right.
And you cannot believe the transformation to that village of bringing water. And what happens is the women go at 3 o'clock in the morning to fetch water from dirty streams.
Yeah.
And they then have to convert that water into something that's drinkable or washable. Mm. Now we put these towers driven by solar with points around the village, and they can walk 500 meters to get water whenever they feel like. And the water is tested to make sure it's drinkable, and you transform their lives. Mm. And now you can extend it to farming. You can extend it to, you know, the women have got more time to go to school. It just transformed their lives. And if corporate South Africa have a massive role to play here, to understand that if you want an inclusive society where everyone benefits from growth, then we have to do a lot more on the social front. Because when I went to business school, they taught us the role of the firm is to maximize profits. Mm. That's the wrong thing. The role of the firm is to meet the needs of all stakeholders, and by doing that, their profits will automatically grow. And your stakeholders are not just your shareholders.
No, I couldn't agree more. I think if you go to a company and they've got impressive offices, you then need to go to the community around that company and see whether they've got, you know, whether they're well looked after. Yeah. And if they're not, you realise that company's not doing its job properly.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
But I also think it's not like three massive things are going to happen. Like, it's all these small little things, the stuff that you're doing at Dulisaka, the many other initiatives that you've got, Stephen.
Yeah, multiple initiatives. That's what transforms. Mm. Big things, you know, you are always a big risk. Mm. Big projects often fail.
Exactly. And we'll have many consignees here, and and that will roll out. And I like your analogy with the circle around you. And I think we must all just draw that circle.
Thank you for listening to this Investec Focus Talk podcast. If you enjoyed this conversation, please take the time to rate us and subscribe to our channel wherever you get your podcasts. And stay tuned for more inspirational content from Business as an Adventure, including fascinating insights on how diversity can build business advantage, a discussion on how business can navigate a tough economy, and the imperative to reimagine education. Find out more at investec.com/BIAA.